Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
Ah, oh, great. Absolutely great. Good week.
Looking forward to the game today.
Absolutely can't wait. There's great rugby on today. And last weekend was a brilliant weekend.
Brilliant,
rugby.
Yeah.
It really was. There was so much going on. Ireland played great. The English match was a cracking game as well. Maybe not the best rugby, but just exciting to watch, and even the Italians putting up a really good display.
You were right about the handicap, the French against the Italians. They were giving them 21 points.
Huge. And really, you know, Italy, it was so close. That just one line at the end that they messed up. They could easily have stolen that game. Absolutely incredible. But we'll see now how they go against England. I wasn't that impressed with England last weekend, but you can expect a backlash from them this week, because there'll be a lot of pressure on them having lost that game against Scotland. And Scotland were great, you know. So, like
very
I said,
good, yeah.
Brilliant rugby going on all together.
Yeah.
How are things with you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Going back today to the Welsh Open is on next week, and then Players is on the following week, you know, so busy couple of weeks.
It's been pretty crazy in the Premier League as well, looking at City and all the news that's coming out about that.
I don't know what's going to happen there. Relegate them, that's right.
Well, you know, it kind of feels like that's inevitable, doesn't it? I mean, what it is, 112 counts of...
Something like that against them. I know Pep Guardiola came out quite defiant, you know, yesterday in the press conference supporting City and saying, you know, he believes in them, but I don't know. So, the only way this came to light was, I think a hacker got into their system and exposed a lot of their financial dealings, and that's how it's all come about. But it looks very, very bad for them, to be honest.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, but it's funny, I saw kind of it was a skit thing that was done during the week. I think it was Connor Sketches was doing it, but it was basically going back over the last number of years and the league titles that have gone their way and the different games that have gone their way and competitions and the knock-on effects of that for other teams. You know, managers have lost their jobs on the back of it. Players have been shipped off to other clubs. You know, it is funny when you see it. I know it was meant as a comedy skit, but it kind of made you think, going, actually, that's pretty close to the bone.
Yeah, very true, yeah. I mean, you know, so many charges against them. I don't know how they're going to get out of it, to be honest, you know. And if that is the case, then a lot of other clubs might be looking at the financial deal. I mean, you'd have a look at PSG in France as well. You know, you might have a look at Chelsea, the way they've been spending money over the last couple of windows, over 500 million.
Yeah. But sure, could be.
The Glazers have been spending okay. That's all I'm worried about.
you're safe enough. It's kind of, you'd wonder as well, is it rife throughout all of those big clubs? Just happening and it's almost an accepted thing.
Yeah, you hear rumours. I mean, that Haaland deal where he was bought out for 55 million, but apparently, you know, his agent got 20 and his father got another 20. So it wasn't a really 55 million pound deal. It was more like a 95 million pound deal. I mean, they're the sort of rumours you hear from other footballers and stuff like that.
And Mbappe as well. He was another
Mbappe,
one.
Mbappe, yeah. You know, so there's lots of underhand dealings that are going on in football. It's not like what the price tag they pay, it's what they pay agents, and because the agents are just rife for underhanded deals, like, you know.
But that's what I mean. You wonder how real are these probes going to be, or is it just going to be a case of,
are they only scratching the surface?
And will they even bother? Like, I mean, I suppose it's like everything when it comes down to that level of money involved in anything, there's always, it's rife for corruption and rife for backhanders and everything else. And I suppose the Premier League probably just want this thing brushed away as quickly as they can and get on with the football, because...
Yeah, I mean, what can they do? What are they going to do to them? Are they going to deduct them points? Are they going to relegate them? You know?
What does that do if they do relegate them, I suppose? That's the next question they get down below. But there's talk that Haaland is already leaving for, is it Barcelona or Real Madrid? I was reading that during the week. There's some clause there that he can get out if they're not in the Premier League. So I don't know. It's weird. What can they do? I suppose that's the big question. What'll they try and do? But
it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
A little bit of a tight one during the week there with Leeds.
No, we dropped points. We were lucky.
Yeah.
And probably could have won it as well, like 2-0 down. Yeah, terrible start, you know. Conceding the goal in the first minute and then second or third minute after the break. But they came back well. It's good to see Sancho back. I don't know what his problems has been. Like, they're obviously maybe sort of mental health issues. But it's good to see him back on the fit, on the pitch and playing pretty good and scoring a goal, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, they did well, to be fair, 2-0 down. They did well to come back and get any sort of points out of the game because it was looking pretty ropey there for a while.
I could have won it at the death, but it's 2 points dropped at home. They're playing Leeds again on Sunday. Away this time, you know, because that was the game during the week that was sort of cancelled because of the Queen's funeral, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
So they've got to play them again, which is quite unusual. But difficult to lose the 2 points at home. You have Brentford, that's a guaranteed 3 points for you.
Yeah, we were poor enough now in the last one. I was a bit disappointed with that one. I didn't expect we were going to lose that one. But anyway, look, Brentford at home, you'd expect we'd bounce back this week and we still have that game in hand. So City did us a favour too. And now with all these other distractions, you never know, they might be taking their eye off the ball a little bit. So it mightn't be too bad. We're sitting
there. It's Arsenal's to lose, Rich.
It is really, isn't it? I mean, to be fair, if they can just keep their heads now for the rest of the season, I would think.
And if City get docked a few points, I mean, they'll be 13 points ahead of Man United if they win the two games in hand.
Yeah.
Which is massive. That's like 5 games they'd have to lose nearly, you know.
We'll see. I'm not going to get carried away now. I know what you're doing here, Ken. I know what you're doing, so stop.
Just
stop now, okay? Go back. Get back in your box. That's enough now. No getting hopeful. What about tomorrow night? Will you watch a bit of the Super Bowl?
That definitely will, yeah. I do like the Super Bowl. I don't know who's there in the halftime, but that's always quite good as well.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking to Stephen O'Brien next about that, so he'll give us the latest.
I'm looking forward to it. It's a great spectacle, isn't it?
It is,
sporting spectacle.
Yeah.
It's and everything that goes with it as well. I mean, it goes on for about 4 hours, but it's fantastic, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a good one to record and watch at your leisure. I don't think I'd be sitting up now watching it live. Although I have done it before, but the ads and everything else drive me crazy. Yeah. But I think we'll definitely record that.
Let's hope we're celebrating a great victory for Ireland today as well against France.
It's going to be a big one.
If France play like the way they played last week, I think Ireland would beat them, no problem.
Yeah, I'm getting a text in here from one of our listeners saying that it's Rihanna at halftime, so that'll
definitely... There you go.
So that'll be one worth
Make
watching.
Make sure you bring your umbrella.
Oh, jeez. Unbelievable. Can't get through. It's Saturday morning, Ken, at this hour of the morning. It's just way too early. You're glad you woke up a little bit.
What
can
you do?
Are you going to watch the Irish match today?
Yeah, I'm on a flight in an hour or so. But I'll be there early enough. I'll watch the game and then I have to travel up to Milton Keynes, Sheffield, and then on to North Wales.
Very good. So you told me what's on this week?
The Welsh Open.
The Welsh Open. Okay.
Welsh Open.
A big turnout for that one?
Oh, there will be. It's up in Llandudno now, just along the North Wales coast. It's a lovely place, and there'll be good crowds. It'll be on BBC Wales and Eurosport as well.
Very good. All right. Well, and you're.
I'm playing as well as commentating. So.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I have to
be careful. One hand.
I have to be careful how we phrase it sometimes these days. You know, I don't want to upset you if I ask you. Okay. It's time for football now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. Certainly a lot better than Man City are these days. Anyway, that's for sure. And it's been the talk of the town all week. Incredible, really, everything that's starting to come out. Over 100 allegations of impropriety against them. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it's incredible, as you say, Reggie, and the fact that it's been going on so long, and this is obviously a deep dive into their accounts over a number of years. So I don't think the Premier League would be coming out with such strong allegations against them if they didn't feel as though they have a strong case. But the question is now whether they follow through with it, which they have to. But Man City have come out in defiance against them with some strong statements and believing their innocence. And obviously Guardiola's backed that up as well. So it'll just be interesting to see how it'll play out. But I think it'll be a long, drawn-out process, something like what we've seen with the UEFA allegations against them, which were overturned at the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So I think we're probably headed for a long, drawn-out case as well, Reggie. And they're of course, going to fight all the allegations against them, because I think some of the comments that Guardiola made in his press conference yesterday was along the lines of, if you're coming after us, you'll probably end up coming after three or four others when you look at the spending the likes of Chelsea have gone through, and maybe Newcastle in time as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But in terms of the allegations against them, it's pretty serious stuff.
Well, that's the point, I suppose. And that's what I've been hearing a lot of people talking about during the week, that essentially this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's talk that this came out because they're, you know, of them being hacked, and they would never have come out otherwise. But there are so many other clubs that if you start to delve into them and look into them, you'll find exactly the same thing. So you'd wonder, is it all going to just be brushed over and just carry on and let it be a free-for-all, or how do they take action?
Yeah, and that is the big question, Reggie, because as you say, if you open up the can of worms with the likes of Man City, and obviously with the money that they've spent over the years, you're opening up cases to all the other clubs, and that is the problem. And are they strong enough, the Premier League, to take them on and go against them in terms of some of the punishments people are talking about? Obviously, points deductions. I can't see them taking titles off them retrospectively, but I think they can punish them in the future. But some people are even talking about expulsion. Now, that would be a serious, serious call to go and do that and try and obviously take them out of the Premier League without them putting up a serious case. So,
But if they don't, is it not all a bit of a pointless exercise, though?
Exactly, right. That's the thing. They've gone as far as this now. I don't see how the Premier League can back out. You know, and if they feel as though the case is as strong as they're making it out with 115 allegations, I'm sure before they made these public, they would have crossed every T, dotted every I in terms of their own case and how strong it may be. Obviously, Man City are always going to come out and try and defend themselves.
Yeah.
But you would like to think that the Premier League have put themselves in such a position that they can't lose if they go against Man City. And that's what we'd like to think for the integrity of competition as well. And if there is other clubs and it is opening up a can of worms, I'd love to see them go the whole hog. But we've often seen with situations like this, are they strong enough to go the whole hog?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they talk about it being the biggest league in the world, but if all of the teams are, you know, if you lose City out of that and other teams are sort of in a shadow and under investigation, it could slip very, very quickly. You know, it's a really interesting one to see how they're going to handle it. But I suppose,
yeah, see, I think it all stems back as well, Reggie, and this has been coming for a while, because we've spoken numerous times, and obviously we like the Premier League and all that it brings. But the money that has been spent in the Premier League over numerous years now is absolutely bonkers. And I think this day was always coming. So I think it goes back to, in terms of the regulation on the league and who's taken over these clubs. And you can't have situations where states are taking over clubs, you know.
Do you think it could actually be the catalyst for a complete overhaul of the Premier League and a total review on how the thing is run to try and get, you know, the monkey back in the cage, let's say, that, you know, that it's gotten too out of control, and this could be the thing that brings it back in line?
Yeah, possibly, and that would be great if that was the case, but they've created such a monster that the monster is 10 times the size of the cage now, and trying to get it back into that cage, it's very, very difficult, I'd say. And that's why I'm saying, if they've come out during the week, which they have, with these allegations, you'd want to have a really strong case to go against them and carry it through. You have to carry it through, because how can we ever clean the thing up if they're not prepared to obviously take them on at the first sight of kind of these allegations? So I think that's the problem for the Premier League, that are they strong enough and will they go the whole hog? Because this will end up like the UEFA going to the Court of Arbitration of Sport and everything. It'll go the whole way it can possibly go in terms of the legal side of things. But you'd like to think that the Premier League are up for that fight and will go the whole hog as well.
Yeah, well, they certainly have a big enough purse to be able to go down that road. There's no doubt about it. They're getting big enough deals. And I think for the integrity of the game, they do need to make sure that it's a level, like a cliche, the level playing field, that all teams have equal opportunity. And as you say, that the countries can't come in and buy clubs and just make it, you know, a league that's unwinnable for anybody else except the absolute money boys, you know. So I think this is a great opportunity for them. I really do. I really think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, hopefully that's the case. Now, the other side of that, Reggie, is the likes of Crystal Palace or Wolves or these clubs, they've all benefited from the fact that these clubs have come in and taken over, and the Sky deals and the TV deals, because you look at the money they're spending as well, and you never would have imagined a Crystal Palace or a small club like that would have been able to spend the money that they've spent. So it is a tough one, but in terms of the integrity of the competition, you can't have states coming in taking over clubs.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a couple of interesting games this weekend in the Premier League, getting back to the football. We had a bit of a slip up, but I think against Brentford we probably should get back on track. You know, Leicester, Spurs, that's one I'm watching with interest, because Leicester seem to be, causing the odd bit of an upset and putting themselves back up the table a little bit.
Yeah, I think with the Arsenal one, it might not be a bad thing, Reggie, that they got a little setback. Yeah. Because as you well know, when everything is going well and everything is going swimmingly, sometimes you can paper over the odd crack. And it's only really when you have a setback that you find out, kind of, it's almost like resetting again, the characters, the focus, all that kind of stuff. So it might not be a bad thing to suffer that little setback. And the fact that Man City never capitalised on that as well, yeah, it's still all the same as it was last Saturday. And they can get back on the horse, as you say, against Brentford and pick up again and go again. So I still wouldn't be too concerned about that setback. I thought Arsenal played quite well, but I'd give a lot of credit to Everton. I thought they were brilliant on the day, and Sean Dyche did a great job. So I think they will get back on the horse today. The Leicester Spurs one, Leicester have picked up a little bit, but I was at the Spurs match and they played ever so well on Sunday, Reggie. They were brilliant against Man City, but the problem for them is they can go out and put in a performance against Man City and then let themselves down against the likes of Leicester. So hopefully they can build on that brilliant win last Sunday as well.
Yeah, it was. You must have enjoyed that. You told us you were going to that. That must have been a great experience. I'm delighted it went well. The Leeds game for United was a bit of a surprise. They did well to get a point out of it in the end.
They did very well, yeah. And obviously the two goals Man United helped them along the way, but they did very well. Man United clawed them back, but it might give them a bit of confidence going forward as well. Again, I think with the situation with them sacking Jesse Marsh, I always felt that was on the cards, Reggie. He never really inspired me, to be honest with you. It was almost like he was always trying to fight against the tide, and I never felt the fans really took to him as well. And the results were poor, ultimately. And I think the fact that Everton acted on getting rid of Lampard and bringing in Dyche, I think that was the main reason Leeds probably acted as well, because they didn't want to get left behind. Because it's just too risky to take that chance that you may be relegated with the money again that's on offer, as we've just spoken about with the Premier League. So I think that's why they acted, and it'll be interesting to see who goes in at Leeds now, because Leeds are a massive club and a brilliant opportunity for some manager out of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just quickly, Liverpool, they have the big derby on Monday night, but they desperately need a win.
Oh, desperately need a win, Reg. Yeah, they're struggling. And I think at the moment, the way it is with how bad they've been playing and the form that they're in, you fancy Everton off the back of that brilliant win against Arsenal, because the confidence that must have given them. So it'll be a really interesting game Monday night. And I'm delighted to see Sean Dyche back. As I said to you last week, I think he's a brilliant manager. Conducts himself really well, and it's good to see him back.
Time to turn our attention to rugby now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Will Slattery. Hello, Will, how are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
Oh, very good. I had such a great weekend last weekend watching the rugby. I enjoyed every minute of it. It brought it home, Will, to me again. The joy of the Six Nations, it just throws something up all the time where you're kind of wondering what's going to happen in games that maybe in other competitions or other times of years are sometimes foregone conclusions. But Scotland, England, thriller of a match. Italy, France, 21 points favourites against Italy. Italy could have stolen it at the end. And Ireland going out there. And, I'm happy to say I was confident about it, but there was plenty that weren't. And just putting, Wales to bed in the first half. What a brilliant weekend of rugby it was.
It was absolutely fantastic, as you said. Three cracking matches, three away wins, I think, for the first time in the history of the Six Nations. Even the France-Italy game, which I think the handicap was 25 points, went down to the final play. And I agree with you. It really kind of brought home the magic of the Six Nations, or how much of a kind of a great, you have all the history. Every little match is its own rivalry. Every game is its own story to tell, going back years and years. And as much as, we love talking Champions Cup and watching those great competitions, even the November series, there's something different about a Six Nations that even probably a World Cup doesn't quite match for various reasons. It's just a very special tournament. And today, the first time ever, we have number one in the world versus number two in the world, both in the Six Nations. it's set up to be an absolutely cracking weekend again. We have two great games today, and in England under pressure again tomorrow. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have a repeat of what we saw last weekend in terms of having just three cracking matches across the weekend.
Yeah, no, that's just to again reiterate. I mean, it last weekend brought back memories because exactly what you said there. It's not about with the Six Nations when you're playing it. It's actually not about the competition, and there's always cliches used of this one game at a time and everything else, but in the Six Nations, each game in its own right is its own competition, and it, you know, it's a win. It feels like a win if you get that result across the line, that another one to go into the history books, you know, the memories of that year that we beat Wales on that year or whatever. That it's a really, really strange competition like that, that each game has so much importance, and that's what we love about it. But anyway, on to today's game, and as you said, the two heavyweights, one versus two in the world rankings. France, on the back of that poor performance they will feel against Italy, coming to Dublin and trying to take on the team that are in form at the moment. And I'm expecting a bit of a backlash from France, but I'm still confident about Ireland.
I'm confident about Ireland as well. I think it'll be hard to know until the end of the tournament, but I do think the teams are in slightly different mental headspaces in terms of what they're trying to get out of this. For Ireland, they're really gunning for that grand slam. They haven't won a Six Nations title under Andy Farrell. I think to have the confidence to go to the World Cup and legitimately think you can win it, you have to beat France today. You can't go into a World Cup having lost all four clashes in a World Cup cycle and then have to play them in their own backyard and have really strong, I think, feelings about beating them. Whereas for France, they won the Grand Slam last year. That was the monkey off the back. It had been 10 years. Not saying they obviously don't want to go hell for leather today and win the game. They obviously do, but they're on the road. Ireland are world number one. You saw last weekend how clued in they are from the first whistle, whereas France were the exact opposite. It wouldn't shock me if France maybe had a somewhat sluggish tournament compared to what they did last year and then really hone in on that home World Cup in the autumn. Whereas you can tell from what Andy Farrell and the players are saying, it's Grand Slam, Six Nations. They're really focusing on the here and now. Obviously, the World Cup is looming, but I just think even in and of itself, for someone like Johnny Sexton, it's his last ever Six Nations, to win a Grand Slam or a title would be massive for this group generally. Like, as you say, these things are their own self-contained things too. So that's what gives me a little confidence to say I do think Ireland are going to be really targeting this game in particular, and I think it'll show in the performance and in the result come the final whistle.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with everything you've said there. And also, I watched the French-Italy game in detail last week and tried to break it down a little bit for myself. And I really thought Italy gifted France 14 points in the beginning of the game. There's no question about that. But beyond that, I thought France really struggled to break Italy down. Defensively, they were very, very well organised, Italy. I thought they were very physical in their contact area, and their line was pretty intact. And France found it hard to break that down. Now, they're going to come up against an Irish team who I was so impressed with last weekend, but their defence is so well organised at the moment. And Caelan Doris, my man of the match last weekend, without a doubt, is leading that pack of forwards brilliantly. I'm struggling to see, and I hope I'm not eating my words, but I'm actually struggling to see where France are going to break down that defensive line of Ireland's. And I think, you look at Entomac being taken off last weekend, there's a perfect example of it.
Yeah, I think they're going to rely heavily on their kicking game. I don't think they're going to play a lot of rugby today, if I'm honest. I think some of those Toulouse players have a very fresh memory of being taken to the cleaners by Leinster with that style of play, last May. I think, they use their kicking game so cleverly. They kick for more metres than any team in the world and have done so over the last 18 months. They have a South
African kick. Be a mistake? Sorry, Will. Would that not be a mistake against this back three? Like, Keenan is so effective under that high ball and brings it back in and turns those kicks into attack so easily.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. They're the best kicking team in the world at the moment. So if any team can pin Ireland, they're going to rely on pinning Ireland back and then that Sean Edwards-led defence to force mistakes and first turnovers in the Irish 22, in the Irish half, and maybe pick off points that way. I don't see them playing, expansive rugby today. I think that will actually play towards Ireland's strengths, which is having a high-tempo game. I think they want to get away from that. Another area I think they'll be really targeting is the breakdown. Like last year in the Stade de France, like they destroyed the Irish breakdown. The amount of counter rooks, they won ball off or forced penalties off. And I think Ireland have really worked on that. The rooking in the opening quarter last weekend against Wales was absolutely phenomenal. The speed of the ball. If they can replicate that against France today, I think the penalty count will rise. France's penalty count last weekend was off the charts. I think it was the most penalties they conceded in the game since Sean Edwards had came in. So I think there's a few things going in Ireland's favour today. I do expect France to kick purely because that's what they've been doing in all their victories. They've won 14 in a row. So for them to go away from that today would be a surprise if they try to play more rugby. But I do think then it would play into Ireland's hands. The faster, quicker game it is, I think Ireland are a fitter team than this French team, so I think it would just pay dividend for Ireland as the game wore on.
Yeah, well, that's where I come in with the thinking that the kicking would be a bad tactic for them. I hope they do kick at us, because I'd be very confident of our back three dealing with that. I think McCluskey's playing very well at the moment. Ringrose is a superstar at the minute, and Johnny Sexton just controlling things brilliantly. So I'm delighted to think that we might get more ball for our back line, because, as you said, our attack is so well organised, and I know from experience, if you're tackling and defending all day long, especially those giants that you have, the likes of Antonio and Bai in the pack, and Flamon and Williams, you know, if you're moving them around and forcing them to have to get into defensive positions all the time and make tackle after tackle after tackle, eventually, I feel, as you said, the fitness of Ireland will come through. We'll find gaps and we'll create holes. So let them kick at us is the way I'd look at that.
Yeah, it's just a question of, like, if their kicking game is successful, it's where Ireland getting this ball, you know, and are Ireland running it out from dangerous areas where if the defence is on point for France, can they force those turnover penalties? Like, you know, Leinster had two back-to-back Champions Cup games, one that they were very successful against Toulouse and one that they weren't very successful against La Rochelle. And again, La Rochelle at the breakdown, they really forced a number of turnover penalties. That's why, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, the rucking was so encouraging last week. It feels like that's an area they've worked on because they know France are so good in that area. You know, forcing turnover penalties, disrupting your ball. That is an area that I think if Ireland can replicate from last weekend, it'll go a long way to winning today.
Big disappointment to see Sheehan out injured, obviously. He was another superstar last weekend. Rob Herring coming in there to start. But I suppose the bonus of Ronan Kelleher being on the bench, fit enough to be on the bench. Good to see Dave Kilcoyne getting back into the fray as well. And Jack Conan is a good addition to bring on as well as Bundiaki should we need them. So it's a pretty strong bench that Ireland have there as well.
Yeah, but Dan Sheehan is a huge loss.
Yes.
Like, God, every time I see him play, he's just getting better and better. And I don't think it's over the top to say now he's the form hooker in the world. I don't think I would swap him for any other player. And even last week, you know, popping up in the wing in the 80th minute to receive those offloads from Mac Hansen after putting in a tireless shift throughout the game. Like, that's I don't know there's any other hooker in the world with that engine, with that skill set. Rob Herring, like, obviously is not the same kind of player, but to be fair to Andy Farrell, the culture he's created in the squad is very much kind of a next man up mentality. Obviously, Johnny Sexton is still the centrepiece, but around him, there's been a lot of players exposed to some key moments. Finlay Beelam had a great game last weekend. There was huge question marks about, you know, if Tyke Furlong got injured, what would happen there? The centre has kind of been a revolving door, really. There's always been one or two guys with an injury. The back three has changed a lot. Like, Andrew Conway was starting in the Six Nations last year. He hasn't played all year. The back row has been rejigged, you know. Jack Conan has come in, he's gone out. Second row as well, Ian Henderson has started at the time. So every kind of line of the team is actually kind of weathered quite well with absentees. And even scrum half, Conor Murray was, you know, really good last week. So I actually have some confidence in Herring to step up today. When he came in the New Zealand tour, he scored that key try. He was a really good contributor off the bench. So, as you say, with Ronan Kelleher backing him up, back in the squad, that maybe gives you that little bit of kind of power off the bench as well. So I'm not massively concerned. Obviously, Sheehan is a huge loss, but I do think Herring can kind of plug a gap today and maybe kind of gain some parity with Marchand, and then maybe Kelleher later on comes on with that bit of heft.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Interesting to see that you and your fellow Left Wing podcast co-host Luke Fitzgerald have gone at opposite ends. You've gone Ireland, he's gone France, so we'll see who gets the bragging rights on that one when it comes around to it. But I suppose moving on to the other games in the competition, England, they were poor last week. It's the only way to describe it. I mean, they were poor. I was impressed with the Scottish team. They hung in there. They stayed right to the end. And in the end, they were by far the better team. But England's game plan was just so predictable. And, you know, there was nothing to it. I mean, the first game, I think I saw a stat. There was 44 kicks in that first half, up and down a kicking tennis. It was dire to watch at times.
Oh, it was alarm bell stuff for England. It's a funny one, obviously, when you sack your coach and you bring in the new coach and then you lose at home to Scotland in the first game. Like, the honeymoon period is very much over. He's already ditched this, the Smith-Farrell axis, which they, I think, misguidedly went back to again last week. Like, They're just such a jumbled mess at the moment. There's so much chopping and changing, and I thought Bortwick would come in and bring some clarity. I thought he would go with Owen Farrell at 10 and pick two proper centres, and he didn't. He was kind of maybe swayed by Nick Evans, the Harlequins attack coach who's in there for this tournament. It didn't go well again, I don't think. And now they have a very pressurised game against Italy. You would presume that they will beat Italy at least at home, but all of a sudden what looked like an inviting fixture list with Scotland at home, Italy at home, and then a trip to a Welsh side in flux, now it becomes very pressurised. Like, and they finish with France and Ireland. Like, so this could be a very long tournament for England, and it's just a remarkable decline from the pomp of Eddie Jones, where you were fearful playing an England team. Now there's no fear factor from the team. The Saracens' core are either gone or very much diminished, and then the players that have been brought in are usually given one cap and tossed out again. It's just, he has a huge job on his hands, and like, even some of the talk after the game saying he had analysed the autumn and England weren't good at anything. Like, I just didn't think it was a very appropriate thing to say. One, obviously you're putting a finger in the eye of Eddie Jones, your predecessor, a man who maybe they don't have a great relationship now, but who gave him his start as a coach with Japan and with England. And you're kind of just like really showing your players, and you're not really fostering confidence by kind of going over all wounds and saying how bad they were in November. And it sounds like he's kind of making an excuse for himself, as in, oh, look what I have to deal with. Can you blame me for losing at home to Scotland when we were so bad? I just didn't like any of it from their performance, from the comments from the coaches. And then some of the positives they were spinning out, I thought were a bit delusional as well, to be honest. I actually think Italy might give them a bit of a game tomorrow. Like, again, the handicap is huge, but Italy's tails are up. They're confident. They're playing a good brand of rugby. I'm sure everyone knows that Ange Capuozzo from Toulouse is one of the star players in world rugby now. If their halfbacks can have a little more control tomorrow, it wouldn't shock me if Italy actually made a game of it. I don't think they'll win, but wouldn't surprise me if they actually made things very uncomfortable for Steve Borthwick at Twickenham again.
I would agree with that entirely. I found it interesting last week with the English game. If you're going to pick someone like Marcus Smith, you're almost saying we're going to play passing, running rugby. I mean, because he's electric at that kind of stuff. He is. He's not everybody's cup of tea, but he's different, and I like him. And you know, he's a threat at all times. But you need a pack of forwards who are going to deliver really good ball to him at pace. And certainly, you don't put in a kicking game. You know, why bother having Marcus Smith at 10 if you're going to have 44 kicks going back and forth in that first half? It's not a running game. Then put in Owen Farrell. So then that tells me today they're going back to the old, you know, stick it up the jumper, boring, kick it up and force Italy to make mistakes stuff. But going forward, I would have thought, you know, you stick with Marcus Smith, you try and bring in an interesting style of running play in the back line, using Owen Farrell in the centre, that might be able to get around teams and score some tries.
Yeah, it's funny. If you gave Marcus Smith the Ireland rucking from last week, he would have absolutely carved Scotland to pieces. Because any out half with that kind of, you know, ball presentation, that quick ball would look good. I think a big problem with Marcus Smith at international level is, having watched him a lot in the Premiership and having really enjoyed watching Harlequins, is it is bears no resemblance to what international rugby is actually like. The defensive line speed in the Premiership is just very, very weak compared to international. It's probably going from like 20% defensive, you know, pressure to 100%. And I just don't know how replicable it is for Marcus Smith to take that game and just transport it to international rugby. Like, he had started 15 tests in a row until he was dropped this weekend. So it's not as if it's a throwing babies out with bathwater. Like, he's had a good run of games over a year to see if he can transfer it in. I think, I'm not saying discard him, I think as a bench option, he played some of his best rugby in November in the last 20 minutes against New Zealand, against South Africa, where it got a little bit looser. But I think he's a bench option for now. I think you have to kind of build around Owen Farrell, as you said, go back to maybe a more traditional style of England game. And the pack have to just play better as well. Like, you know, the ruck speed is something that I've mentioned a couple of times today. Like, you know, if you're not getting quick ball, you can do very little in attack. Everything gets slowed down. The defences have more time to set. You saw the Welsh defence on their heels in that opening 20 minutes. They couldn't live with Ireland. Ireland weren't doing anything spectacular with the ball. They were just moving the point of contact, a very quick ball, and the penalty count goes up. You get soft shoulders. Like, the two tries Ireland scored were from that kind of rucking and quick ball presentation. England need to try to get to that level. And it'll be a big task, judging from what I've seen in the last couple of months and just even last weekend.
Okay, the other cracker I'm really looking forward to today, Scotland-Wales. Warren Gatland came in last weekend. There was all sorts of talk about him. He went back to the old reliables that he knew from his day, but he forgot that they got a lot older. He's now made a lot of changes to that team based on that performance last week. But I think Scotland are a team with their tails up, as you mentioned about Italy. I think Scotland certainly have their tails up. They're playing a very interesting brand of rugby. Schoeman is playing fantastically well in prop for them, along with Ferguson. You got Gray, Richie's playing well, and then of course Finn Russell, who's, you know, liable to do anything, and then the try of the tournament and the try of many a year with Van der Merwe last weekend. Scotland are a team that I think could do a real job on Wales today.
Yeah, this is a massive game for Scotland. Like, amazingly, they haven't won their first two matches in this tournament since 1996. So they've never been able to back up, like, win-on-win to kick things off. This is the third year in a row they'll have beaten England in their first game and played Wales. The last 2 years, they couldn't back it up again. They lost in, you know, kind of ridiculous circumstances both times, that they should have put them away both times. So this is a huge test for them in terms of just being a bit more consistent. Everyone knows at this stage they can pull off a one-off performance and have a big win. They've won in the Stade de France. They've won in Twickenham twice. This is about just taking care of business when you're the favourites. Something that, to be fair to Ireland, have always been, you know, good at home. Like, they, you know, they very rarely slip up in a home game. Their home record is very, very strong. For Scotland, as you said, you mentioned some guys who are playing great rugby. Another guy who people will be familiar with from the URC is Sione Tuipulotu from Glasgow, who's been a really good player at centre for them, and, you know, putting in a few clever little kicks last weekend for a try for Hugh Jones, and that's a really good centre partnership as well. They're in form, they're at home, they're confident. I do expect them to win today, but there is a nagging feeling about that. Do they can they handle the pressure of being favourites? They're kind of good when it's a little bit of a free shot and they can throw it around and come away with a big win. But this is a much different game. And to be fair, to Gatland, I agree with you. Like, he went to the old guard last weekend and they did look old and jaded and tired. He's changed it up pretty substantially this week, and I like the changes he made. If people have, you know, watch much Premiership rugby, Tommy Raffel is coming at open side flanker. He's been a really good player for Leicester. Chris Tizuna from Exeter is coming at number six. He's a huge man. He's a great prospect, very rangy runner. And Daffa Jenkins coming in for Alan Wynne-Jones at second row. They're three of the best young forwards in England in the Premiership at the moment.
Yep.
So I think that will offer them a little bit more in terms of, you know, their pack. I don't think it'll be enough to win, but it wouldn't shock me again if this was a close game. I think it's kind of set up for Scotland to run away with it, get the bonus point win after last week. But I just think there might be a little bit of nervousness in the air, and Warren Gatland, if he can't get a performance out of Wales today, even in terms of going close, it becomes a very long Six Nations. They have to go to Rome, remember, as well. Like, that could be a wooden spoon decider, and the Gatland Messiah factor could end up with zero wins from five, potentially. So, as you say, it's set up to be an absolute cracker again. Two weekends in a row, we have two great back-to-back games. So, yeah, it's set up to be brilliant.
Now it's time to turn our attention to what the Americans like to call the biggest sporting event in the world. But for those of us outside of America, there might be a few things that are slightly bigger, but it's certainly going to be one of the most watched events in the world. There's no question about it. I am talking about the Super Bowl, of course. And Stephen O'Brien from the UK Packers is here to talk to us about that. Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. A bit of shade there, Reg. A bit of shade. You know, you're looking at our American counterparts and saying that... You know what's funny, though? You're right, because whoever wins the Super Bowl, they're like, they're the best team in the world. And you're thinking, America. They're the best team in America.
It's a bit like the World Series in baseball that goes on in America. Yeah.
That's how they do it. But look, it's going to be great. I mean, the viewership is obviously the roof. It's something that we always talk about every year when it gets to this stage. But look, you look at the FIFA World Cup, and you look at the amount of people viewing that. Like, it's up in the billions.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at this one, and the max audience size is 200 million. So it dwarfs in comparison, but like, they've dubbed it themselves the greatest show on turf. No, I don't say that sort of tongue-in-cheek. I think it's fantastic. Obviously, this is what I immerse myself in constantly with the Packers and UK Packers and all that kind of stuff. But it's insane the sort of disparity, Reg, between how we view it and then how they view it. Two-thirds of the US population watched the Super Bowl last
year. Really? Two-thirds?
Two-thirds, yeah. Wow. And they said that 90% of the people have had a TV on during the time frame that the Super Bowl was on, we're watching the Super Bowl. Wow. So if your telly's on for the Super Bowl, it's on. You know, just 10% amazing. Of the old people watching Fox News and shouting the clouds. But everyone else is watching the Super Bowl. So it's about, 208 million viewers total. So 130 countries, 30 languages. It's a pretty big deal. But you're kind of right what you were saying to Ken there. I think what sort of discourages people this side of the pond, Reg, is just the lateness. It starts at 11:30. So, yeah. Like, you know, but as you said, I mean, look, it's different than days gone by where you'd have to stay up and sort of call in sick the next day. People tend to record it, and they might record it, go to bed, wake up at 6, and then watch it and forward past all the ads and stuff like that as well. But yeah, really big deal, and it should be a great game.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's whatever else you might say about it, entertainment-wise, it always has that. One of our listeners helped me out, Paul Egan in Rathgool. He helped me out to tell me that it's Rihanna at the halftime show. I hadn't even checked that out. Everybody always loves to talk about the halftime show and what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from plenty of people, Reg, who will watch the first half. They'll stay for the halftime show and then they'll just go to bed and watch the second half and make it up. Mm. It should be a good show, though. I mean, you know, there was this sort of nonsense narrative that, like, oh, the football's for the men and the halftime show's for the women. Like, how patronising is that? Mm. And that's not the case. I mean, you know, they just put on just spectacular performers. And it's a really fascinating thing, really, because when you look at it, apparently they charge the performer to perform.
That's right. You told me that last year at the weekend, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, I mean, they spent a couple of million to have the privilege. Now, they asked Rihanna before to do it. I think it was 2019, and she says no, because Rihanna, and like Ken was saying about the umbrella thing, we can all think of her songs that come to mind, and some of them, Reg, I'm not going to lie, as I say, are absolute bangers, right? Hmm. But the thing is she's a business mogul now. I mean, she hasn't performed, she says, on stage for 7 years.
Right.
And the article that I read that in showed her on stage performing in 2018, so do the math yourself,
okay,
right?
Yeah, right?
But apparently, she's saying she hasn't performed in 7 years.
I hope she's accounts in her own business.
I know, yeah, Jesus, yeah, hand it off to someone else, love. But yeah, look, she has this business called Fenty, and it's huge. I mean, the woman's, I think she's probably a billionaire now. Mm. She's won the Grammy 9 times. She's 14 number ones. So again, it's just, as you say, they do get the best of the best. Not only that, though, you'll have the sort of peripheral characters too. Last year they had Kendrick Lamar and Eminem, but then Eminem brought 50 Cent, who brought Snoop Dogg, who brought Dr. Dre,
Snoop Dogg, who fell asleep. He looked like he was asleep up on the stage. He was so out.
I know, yeah. There was some illegal activity going on as well, apparently. But when you look at it, look, we had Beyonce, Madonna, Coldplay, Katy Perry, U2, Lady Gaga, Mickey Mac Jackson was there doing it at one stage. But look, yeah. There's a guy called Chris Stapleton, who's singing the national anthem as well. So they don't just sort of roll out anybody.
He's a country western singer, isn't he? Yeah.
Country western, massive, yeah. Really cool. If anyone look
Tennessee
up
his, Whiskey,
you know,
is that his song?
Oh, that's him. That's him, Reg. I can see you now. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You're sitting down with a cigar watching the rugby.
I've been watching a lot of Yellowstone, so I'm getting my country on, you know. I got a Stetson on order and a nice pair of Wranglers coming out of the wardrobe.
Yeah, that's the thing. People don't know you're sitting there in chaps, you know, sitting there in chaps right now. Jodhpur's on. But yeah, look, it's going to be good. As you say, Chris Stapleton, he's a real soulful dude. So there's just so much pageantry about it. Even the ads, Reg, and we talk about this every single year. You know, the cost of the ads keep going up. So for a 30-second advert in the Super Bowl, 7 million.
Wow.
To pay 7 million quid. Not only that, you sort of think, who the hell is buying these things for 7 million? That must be a hard sale.
I saw a brilliant one during the week for Doritos, that leaked out, which was the Breaking Bad guys.
Breaking Bad,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, they are brilliant ads, you have to say.
They do, yeah. Well, look, I mean, look at the numbers, 200 million people. I mean, all eyes are on the Super Bowl. And the NFL did something, it's all about money. And the NFL did something really, really clever, and they made the ads a spectacle in themselves.
Mm.
And probably by pricing them, that look, there were 6.5 million last year, there were 5.5 million the year before. So if you look at how they've progressed, 1967, Reg, first Super Bowl, $37.5 grand, you could get yourself a 30-second ad. 1994, they broke the 1 million mark. 2017, they broke the 5 million mark. Now we're over 7. So it's sort of projected that they'll be paying about 10 million quid for an advert by 2030, you know, if, you know, the wars around the world don't end us all before then. But yeah, look, it's a big business. But
it's
the ads, you can go onto YouTube now and you can look at, and there's so many articles about these are the best ones.
Yeah.
You look at the people that are in them, Reg. Heineken have ads out, you know, Kevin Bacon's in it.
Yeah, superstars.
John Dean is in ads.
Yeah,
they're the biggest of the big, the massive names in it. I mean, you don't get sort of any Joe Soap, and everyone's trying to outdo each other with the comedy as well.
Yeah.
But every so often, I'm always surprised, Reg, though. You'll see them all comedy, all top-notch, and then one will come out with some really boring ad about telling you about internet speeds. You're kind of thinking, like,
Yeah, maybe they're trying to be different. Okay, talk about the game itself. Obviously, it's the Chiefs against the Eagles. The tale of two quarterbacks. We're looking at Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes sort of being the two names everybody's talking about. How do you see it going?
It's a tough one. You know, I was actually surprised to see that the Eagles are favourites. They're 1.5 point favourites, which is nothing really. And I don't know why. Because when you look at the sort of narrative, they say, look, the Eagles had the easier run into the Super Bowl. And Jalen Hurts, when you look, you talk about those two quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts has broken all the records this season with how he runs the ball in for rushing touchdowns and all that kind of stuff. And then you look on the opposite side, Patrick Mahomes. The guy's a beast, but he has a high ankle sprain. So people are, I think, pointing at that, Reg, and going, he's probably going to be injured. But this happened to him in 2019. And he came out the next game after he got that ankle sprain and threw for 443 yards. And then there's sort of people are like, oh, well, let's be super analytical and say, you know, this is 3 weeks after he got that injury. How did he perform then? Amazingly. Back in 2019, absolutely amazingly. How I'd look at this game is that it's one of those phrases, and not to be too cliche, about the immovable force meeting the unstoppable object. I mean, these are the two best games in their conference. The Chiefs have the X factor because they've been there before with this sort of team. Travis Kelce is a fantastic tight end. However, the Eagles' defense are the best against tight ends. So you have the best tight end coming up against the best defense against tight end. And then, of course, the Eagles have one of the best offensive lines in football. And then on the flip side, the Chiefs have one of the best defenses when it comes to pass rush. And it's, you know, vice versa. So it really is taking kind of the best of one thing coming up against the best of the other. Now, you know, I think then what it comes down to for me is coaching. So Andy Reid is the head coach of the Chiefs. He's been a head coach for 24 years now. You know, they've been to Super Bowls before. He's won one before recently, and he sort of got over the hoopla about him not being able to win a playoff game. And I think that's probably where this game hinges for me. But Reg, like, this could be an absolutely slobber knocker of a game, if you will, to quote George Hook. You know, because these are two teams that have two young quarterbacks who can really throw the ball. And, you know, it's not like a Tom Brady thing. And all respect to Tom Brady, where he can dink and dunk the ball and 5 yards and 10 yards. These two quarterbacks have big playability, which means that the game could be going nowhere for a while. Then all of a sudden you have a 70-yard pass, and then he goes in for a touchdown. So I don't think this is a game where one team runs away with it. But what I would say is, if you're watching the game and you're staying up late and one of the teams does start to run away with it, stick with it, because this isn't a game where, you know, one team runs away with it and then the game ends. You know, both of these quarterbacks and these teams have the chance to come back at each other as the game goes on. Now, that's probably famous last words, and the game will be 57-0 or something now. Yeah. But look, the odds are the Eagles win, but I think that Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid and the Chiefs pull this out of the bag in this game, because I just don't think he can write the guy off.
Time for GAA with Declan Drake now.
Three of our four flagship Dublin teams were in action over the bank holiday weekend, all on the road and in Munster. On Sunday, Desi Farrell brought the senior footballers to the Gaelic grounds in Limerick for their first road trip in this season's Allianz National Football League Division 2 campaign. It was the first meeting of Dublin and Limerick since 2007. And the visitors, thanks to goals from Ruhaini midfielder Brian Fenton for the second consecutive week, and a Dean Rock penalty, earned a 2-17-1-11 victory. That now makes it 2 wins from 2 for Desi Farrell so far in this league campaign for a Dublin team who don't have a game this weekend. Next up is the trip tomorrow week to Páirc Uí Chaoimh, the newly revamped Páirc Uí Chaoimh, to face the home team Cork. That will be Dublin's first visit there since the stadium was redeveloped. Indeed, just going back briefly to the Limerick game, great to see three of Dublin's scorers on the day were newcomers, including Greg McEnany, Darren Newcomb and Killian O'Gara. Mention of Cork there a little bit earlier on, that was the venue for the Dublin Ladies on Bank Holiday Monday as they played their third round game in the Lido Ladies National Football League. It was back-to-back away games for Mick Bowen's outfit, who have now made it 2 wins from 3 in this season's league competition, thanks to a 4-13-3-15 success over Cork in what was a crazy game. Dublin were 10 points clear at the break. Carla Rowe, Cuiva O'Connor, Hannah Tyrrell and Kate Sullivan all raising green flags before Cork stormed back brilliantly in the second half to edge themselves a point clear. It was then left to Dublin skipper Clonmara's Carla Rowe, first of all to kick a leveller and then ultimately a late winner to send the Capital Ladies back up the M8 motorway, very happy indeed with the full set of points. After three consecutive weeks of league outings, there is no game for the Blues this weekend, but there's a very special event taking place at St Clair's DCU tomorrow afternoon. The go-ahead Ireland club stars are back on the agenda. The junior game is off at 12:30 with the senior version at 2:15. Now, while admission to the venue is free tomorrow, donations are asked for Jigsaw YMH in lieu. It was always a great day in the past in the calendar, and we wish every success to everyone taking part there tomorrow afternoon out in DCU. Finally, to hurling, and Dublin opens their Division 1B Allianz National League campaign with a second consecutive draw with Waterford. Last year it was at Parnell Park, last Sunday it was at the Fraher Field in Dungarvan. As it finished, Dublin 3-16, Waterford 2-19. Keane O'Sullivan with a brace of goals for Micheál Donoghue's Chargers in his first league game in charge of the county, while Nafina clubman Donald Burke also raised a green flag. Indeed, it was Burke deep into stoppage time that earned a share of the spoils for the Dubs with a last gasp free. Our regular hurling analyst Sean Lane was a keen observer of proceedings in Waterford last Sunday. Sean, Waterford finished with 13 players, were a point up and drew the game. Dublin with 15 were a point down and drew the game. So which of the two managers would you think was the happiest leaving the Fraher Field last Sunday evening?
You know, if you said to me, Declan, first thing Sunday morning, that Dublin would get a draw in Waterford with a new look team, a new manager up against a Davy Fitzgerald, as you alluded to, a manager in Waterford, and knowing how Davy would have them fired up, I would have taken it. I'd bite your arm off to get a draw. But the point you make is very valid. You know, they finished with 13, Waterford did. You'd be saying, you'd like to get the 2 points there. But look, we did fall behind very late in the game. To the credit of the lads, they kept going. And with some really good performances, I thought Keane O'Sullivan's two goals were excellent. Keane Boland, the catch for the penalty at the end was fantastic, and he got 3 points in play. And look, Donald Burke, just surprises us all the time with he got 1-7 from play. But Alex Considine played really well up front. So that's four good forwards, Declan. So that's a good start to the National League.
We've spoken in the past, Sean, about our ability to get goals, or perhaps our inability to get goals, and how important that would be to get right. But certainly young Keane O'Sullivan is starting off on the right track this year.
Yeah, and you know, we know from the past that goals are really important in hurling. If you get three goals, I always said you shouldn't be beaten. If you don't get any goals, you're going to find it awful hard to win. And in between sometimes lies the difference between winning and losing. But Keane O'Sullivan, you know, the second goal in particular. Now, I did think the Waterford fullback was pretty poor for it. He let it in over his head. But when he got the ball possession, he put his eyes back out the field and bounced off his left foot. It went inside and took out the hook and flew it into the roof of the net. Took a nice pass from, I think it was Alex Considine, for the first goal. Donald Burke was the other goal from a penalty, and sure, it was a blatant penalty before all. Keane Boland, he might as well have been playing for Ireland in the Six Nations, the way he was taken down. But we got a point, and as you said, it's important now that we kind of build on that, and we're at home to Antrim the next day.
Before we look at that, just in relation to the Waterford game, you mentioned some of the players there, like Keane O'Sullivan, like Keane Boland, and also Donald Burke. But of the newer players that were coming into the setup, Sean, how did they perform in the hot cauldron of an opening National League game?
Well, certainly the one that stood out to me was Conor Donoghue from Earnsoyle, number 5, very, very big tall guy. Got a smashing point from play, and probably needed it. Also, I like this Chris O'Leary fella from Luke, and I thought he did really well. Another very, very big guy, and added something to it. The experience will do them the world of good. We had great performances equally in the backs. I thought Paul Crummy did well in AJ when he came in up front. A downbeat, I would have to say, Ronan Hayes looked badly injured going off, so that could be a downside. But I thought the backs, you know, the usual element, Conor Burke at number 6, it was an exceptionally good choice and did well. Sean Brennan was safe in goal, and look at Owen O'Donnell and Dara Gray. They gave a solid performance, so very, very happy with the performance. And I'm sure Micheál Donoghue is too.
Yeah, and Owen O'Donnell landed a monster of a point in the game as well. You mentioned Micheál Donoghue there. It was his first league game in charge, of course, of Dublin. He had three Walsh Cup games before that, winning two of them, including one against Antrim, who we'll talk about a little bit later in relation to the game at Parnell Park on Sunday. But at the early doors, first week February, he's been working with the panel now for a couple of months, probably since the middle of November or thereabouts. Can you see his stamp coming on already, Sean?
I can, and if I was to pick out a couple of things that Donald Burke did on Saturday or Sunday, you know, when he was probably at impossible angles, instead of having a go for a point, he fed the inside line, and I do believe that certainly the second Keane O'Sullivan goal came from that. I think they're more direct. I think the work rate, if you go watch the last 15 minutes when the game was really in the melting pot, Declan, the Dublin backs were very, very all over the wall for forwards. But what I did like in the middle of all that, they weren't reckless. They were very disciplined. They had their hands at the right height, kind of opposite the man in possession's elbow rather than up around his throat. So very, very impressed in what I saw. It can only get better. I think he's a very, very good panel. And you know what? When you have a couple of defections, someone like Keane O'Sullivan, Keane Boland, I mean, they both stood up when it really mattered. And if you were to be honest with it, for the last maybe 18 months, they were fringe players on the team. And, you know, maybe their time has come now, and it's great to see.
12 months ago, as I said at the start of the piece, we had a stirring draw against Waterford, which was at Parnell Park, and then we went down to Tipperary and Semple Stadium, had a magnificent victory over the home team that particular evening. We'll be looking for a similar kind of outcome this week. It's a first home game in the league. It's against Antrim, who, as I've said already, we've played in the Walsh Cup, but very important to build on the momentum and the success of last week.
Yeah, and Antrim, look, everybody knows that Antrim are probably a little bit better when they play in Corrigan Park, and last weekend there was no exception. Kilkenny beat them, and a reasonably strong Kilkenny beat them, but only beat them by 5 or 6 points, and we're only 3 or 4 up for most of the game there. You know, Antrim have Cunning and McManus as two key forwards. They'll give Dublin enough of it as well at the weekend. But what we need from Dublin is just more of the same discipline, move the ball fast. I've no doubt Michal Donoghue will be using all these games to blood new players. But, you know, he has 12 or 13 lads that you can rely on there. He has another 4 or 5 to find. There's no doubt about that. But a win on Sunday would leave Dublin in a nice place to be 3 points out of 4.
Yeah, be the same position that they were in last year. And we know ultimately they didn't kick on, which of course they have to do this year. That's the basic difference, and that's something and a fact that won't have been lost on Micheál Donoghue.
No, it won't, Declan. And if you take the league and the championship last year, we actually did extremely well in both competitions till we met Kilkenny. Kilkenny beat us in the championship in Parnell Park. Kilkenny also beat us in the league. Other than that, we were unbeaten in the league because we beat Tipperary in Semple Stadium, as you say. We drew at Waterford and we beat whatever else was in our section, Leash and that. But we just came up, you know, a cropper against Kilkenny, and it destroyed us. If you remember, we'd gone to Wexford Park in the championship, and we all kind of said, well, that's grand, we've 3 wins out of 3, we're true now. And little did we know that Wexford would go to Nolan Park and knock them out. But Kilkenny bet us, that is well, in Parnell Park, and put us out. So that'll be a big game that I'll be watching when Dublin meet Kilkenny, Declan, to see how we perform. And you know, Kilkenny have new management, and Kilkenny are trying out a few players as well. They looked very physical, Kilkenny. I saw them on the TV, and very, very strong and well conditioned. But they have new management, and they'll be trying new things. And maybe, you know, the old Brian Cody, when we get into the bowels of championship, we'll see, you know, without Brian Cody on the line, you know, how far Kilkenny are away.
Into Dublin, and a new manager in Luke and Sarah. Fields, of course, the great Charlie Carter, 3-time All-Ireland medalist. So another Dublin club has changed its manager in a bid to try and wrestle the title back off Kilmacud Crokes in 2023. What's your opinion of Charlie Carter's appointment out west?
I think it's great, Declan. We've had some marvellous appointments. Our own club in Ballinteer, we had Liam Dunn for a period, and he did some tremendous work here. You know, we had Paul Flynn up in St Jude's. We've had key guys in Coole, Matty Kenny. It just raises the high profile, or the profile of hurling in Dublin. We have a Division 2 team in football this year, unfortunately, and we still have a Division 1 team in hurling. So the more profile we get in hurling in the capital, the better. I think that there's Lucan have been thereabouts. They've been unlucky once or twice. It's been their own fault once or twice as well. But, you know, somebody come in with a couple of ideas, particularly for the forwards. I think that Lucan won't be far off, but I think it's a great appointment for both Lucan and also for Dublin Hurling.
Be interesting to see if the hand of your friend Cody, where that might lie in this particular process as well, how much Charlie's picked up off him over the years. I'm sure he's picked up a trick or two. You'd have to really, wouldn't you? Sean Lane, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Parnell Park. The game with Antrim, round 2, Division 1B of the Allianz National Hurling League, Reg, throws in at 3:30.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.